Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Ancient Warfare Answers. This one is Ancient Warfare on the Road. I'm actually in New Zealand as we record this, so hopefully this works. Hence, just audio rather than visuals. I don't look up to much ancient warfaring. And, of course, you can ask a question. We're going to answer a question in just a moment. And you can answer a question in any way of contacting us, whether it be on Facebook or email or message on the website. But of course, you can also become a Patreon or a patron of the chat on Patreon, www.patreon.com/ancient warfare podcast. And there are three levels of backing that you can do there, even getting a copy of the magazine digitally or physically, which is pretty exciting. Today's question is, how do we trust Homer? Are there good examples of corroborating accounts that give us a means to verify or put his missives in context? Now, that is a question to which the simple answer is we've just done an issue of the magazine on Homeric warfare, which looks at that question. So we can read that copy of the magazine. But I thought we might have a bit of a chat about Homer. Homer gets a bit of a hard time from a lot of people today about not being a description of a particular kind of warfare, but actually being a a piece of poetry that jumbles everything up. And whilst that is true in some extent, there's a lot more useful material in Homer than a lot of naysayers give him credit for. So very, very rough breakdown. The general chronology of the Trojan War is the 12th century BC is when we think it was fought. There are some disagreements about that, putting it in an earlier period. But generally, consensus has come down to around about 1150 BC, so the 12th century BC. Homer, there is a lot of disagreement about Homer too, but generally, consensus is that the poems are written in the mid-8th century BC, around 750 BC. Whether that would by someone named Homer or whether the name Homer was given to whoever wrote it down, that's what happened. And then, of course, there is the idea that it was an oral poem prior to that, and therefore it evolves, changes, modifies until it gets written down, and that, of course, sort of codifies the poem. And the interesting thing about that, of course, is that when we do have fragments of Homer on papyrus and quoted by later authors, the poem they quote is the poem we've got. It's not bits of Homer missing from the Homer we've got in the Iliad in its 24 books. So that's quite an amazing feat in itself. And it's in that oral tradition that you get all sorts of really interesting insights to warfare, essentially in the period before the Trojan War and up to the time that the poem's written down. And of course, that is a problem in the sense that it's not giving you the warfare of the Trojan War, it's giving you the warfare of a period that covers roughly 800 years. So you've got things like the boar tusk helmets that we've found archaeologically, and the description that Homer gives us of the boar's tusk helmet being worn by various people in the Trojan Wars, and the archaeological record of those helmets being discovered is a real correspondence, that they're a really accurate description in the poems of what is found in the ground. The issue, of course, is that they tend to date from around 1500 BC onwards. That raises a whole different issue of whether equipment such as those sorts of things would continue to be used, continue to be worn. My thinking on that is yes, they would, because they would be completely usable for, you can look at them coming out of the ground archaeologically. If you gave them a new piece of leather, your boar tusk helmet is as good as it was when it was made. So in that regard, they may well have been worn long after they were in fashion, so to speak. I just did air quotes, but you can't see those. Now, the other thing, of course, is that you then get the descriptions of phalanxes. Now, it's a mass of men. It's a shield wall. And the interesting thing about that, of course, is that men standing with shields close to one another will always resemble a phalanx, will always resemble a shield wall from the Trojan period right through to the First Crusade. So, you know, you've got three more thousand years of warfare where there's a shield wall and or what looks like a phalanx. Phalanx seems to mean a mass of men, not the organized phalanx that comes later under the classical period or the Macedonian period. So in that regard, you have these masses of men walking on the battlefield and fighting. They don't feature much in the poem, even though they are present. And Homer concentrates on heroic warfare, the warfare between individual warriors, Achilles, Hector, all of the others. So in that regard, is that an accurate reflection of warfare in the period? Probably, I think. I think heroic warfare, great individuals fighting, continues a lot longer than we like to think of it. It's something that's emphasized later in the Roman Republic, in the Roman Empire. It's even something that's emphasized in Greek phalanx warfare, even when it shouldn't be, because, of course, you've got great individuals and individual exploits make up the stories in Homer. They make up the stories in Herodotus. They make up the stories in Thucydides and Diodorus and Xenophon. So even though we're supposed to have later periods of warfare which focus on groups of men, we're still told about individuals' exploits within those groups. And so in that regard, what Homer is describing sets a pattern, if you like, that is copied in, by not only later warriors, but by later historians, because that's what people want to read about. They want to read about individuals' exploits, and we still do. And warfare through the ages, even in the, you know, the advent of the tank and the aircraft, is still about individuals' exploits. So in a way, that sets the pattern, and it's still the pattern today. So you've, of course, got these groups of warfare with individual exploits within them. And the other thing, of course, that's interesting about Homer, which falls out in a long way, there is a lot of archery going on in Homeric warfare, and there are some very good archers, Teucer and Alexandros or Paris being the two major ones. But yet at the same time, there is betrayal in Homer's poetry of a denigration of the archer's art or lack of art, or, you know, it being a coward's weapon at several points. That is a problematic one for any historian of archery, because despite this idea that archery is denigrated in hoplite warfare, they all use archers. There are archers in Athens who are employed by the Athenians to be archers in the classical period, at the time where supposedly archery is looked down upon. So that in a way is a trope of literature, that you look down on archers, and yet archers are essential and necessary and used. And that's partially there in Homer. And of course, lots of other cultures use archers, and we get reins of shafts. And I think part of it becomes the idea of an East versus West. You know, archery is the weapon of the Persian, and especially after Marathon and the Persian Wars, the idea that you have hoplites versus archers, excuse me, is the idea of that kind of parallel. But of course, in the classical period, later in the 5th century BC, the Athenians have an archery contingent that gets up to 1,200 people strong. So there's a lot of archers at Athens, for instance. So the attitude towards archery doesn't really reflect the realities of Greek warfare, and yet the presence of archers does in Homer. So that corroborates that. And of course, there have been arrow shafts found around Hesylix, the site of Troy. And then you've got the idea of the chariot. Now, the chariot chariot's yet another, and we've had issues of the magazine about the chariot in warfare, because in the Near East, the chariot is a platform, generally a mobile archery platform. And in Homer, the chariot is not. The chariot is what's termed a battle taxi, where warriors ride to battle in the chariots. Now, The interesting thing about the chariots, of course, is that we have some examples of chariot furniture and things surviving from the period. We've got reliefs and things showing chariots being used. So no doubt chariots existed. Whether the form of their warfare existed in the way that Homer describes it at the time of the Trojan War in the 12th century BC is a problem. There are ramps at Troy which tell you that these were probably able to be ridden and driven around cities like that. Other sites have stairs, which, you know, if you're a fan of the Daleks, you know that your chariot won't go upstairs or downstairs. And of course, Greece itself is not really that conducive to chariot warfare. Most chariot warfare is flat plain, even artificially flattened plain, to make it useful for chariots, whereas Greece does not have much of that terrain at all. And so if chariots do exist, they're a sort of a status symbol, which ties into the idea that they might have been used as transportation for heroes to warfare, and those heroes then dismounted and fought, which is what the Homeric picture paints. We do, of course, have the linear B tablets, which tell us about all these chariot parts and chariot wheels. So chariots are a big part, you know, in places like Crete and in Pylos and other centers, Mycenae. So chariots are definitely present, but they couldn't act the way that massed chariotry does in the Near East and Egypt. So whilst we might say that the description of chariot warfare in Homer isn't an accurate one, it kind of reflects certainly the Greek territory, the terrain that the Greeks would be using it on. And so the idea that it's not a mass chariotry, but a transport for a hero works. And then, of course, you've got infantry, whether they be light infantry or heavy infantry. And you've got that. You've also got things like the Dendra Panoply, which predate the Trojan War, and yet you've got Homeric descriptions of people encased in bronze, which entirely fit with the idea of a panoply like the Dendra Panoply. And these would be, you know, warriors who would presumably stand on a chariot bed and be impervious to enemy archery and spear casts. And they would then, you know, either dismount to fight, or they would stay on the chariot and thrust their spear there. So, with spear casts, spear thrusts, throwing rocks. I mean, that's the other thing, is that there are rocks in battle in Homer used a lot. And, of course, it's a rock as no other man could lift easily. And they disappear from warfare, even though we know that later the Psylloi used rocks and threw rocks. So I think rocks are a present in most warfare, just they're not very heroic and they don't get emphasized later. I was reading a battle in the English Civil War where the Lord Montrose got his rear rank to pick up rocks during the English Civil War. So picking up rocks and throwing them at the enemy is still as effective then as it is now. So in that regard, that's sort of, to me, that's not an inaccurate thing. That's an accurate thing. There have been some studies on the accuracy of the wounds that Homer describes and how physiologically they work. So to me, on balance, there's more that gives Homer a tick than a cross when it comes to relying on him and corroborating him for warfare and how it works. So then the best thing to do, of course, is to read your Homer. And have a look at the other aspects of the war, because most of it corroborates Homer as an accurate source to me than the opposite. So enjoy, and we will see you again next time on Ancient Warfare Answers. Thank you.